These are the slides for Sony versus Universal. I don't know why the top of this slide says Sony versus MGM. I apologize. So there was this thing called the VCR. Actually, there was this thing called the Betamax, which actually came before the VCR. Here are some of the ads from Sony's original distribution of this device. It would take tapes that you would put into these devices, and you could set it to record at particular times. A modern view on this is your DVR, your YouTube TV interface, where you click and say, I'd like a copy of that show. The push by Sony was that this allowed for what they called time shifting. So you see the ad on the right. Thanks to Sony's Betamax, he's not missing the last half hour of the late show. Instead, he's able to sleep and watch it later, right? So the idea that you would time shift it in some way means that you would watch it some later date. Universal Studios and other movie studios were really scared by the Betamax. They thought this would completely destroy their ability to do a couple of things. One, people wouldn't go out to theaters anymore. They would wait for the movies to come on TV and they would tape them. This was actually even before the kind of blockbuster, you know, rent a movie kind of market was out there. They were also concerned that these devices had this ability where you could fast forward through commercials. And this is in the day and age where there's a little bit of pay TV, HBO's getting started, and pay-per-views out there. But almost all of the monetary model for television was by ad buys. And the fear was if these devices got everywhere, people would be fast-forwarding through the commercials, and then we wouldn't be able to get as much money. We being the broadcasters wouldn't be able to get as much money when we broadcasted our television shows over the air. And so they end up suing Sony. And they sue Sony really for indirect infringement. We'll talk about what indirect infringement means next class or next virtual session here. But the direct infringers, the people who are making the copies, are this guy on the right that's going to sleep because he can't stay up late enough to see the last half hour of the late show. He's made a copy of the show. All right, he's put the VCR tape in there, pushed record without the authorization of the underlying copyright holder. And so the question in the case comes down to, we'll talk about the indirect part here in a little bit, which was Sony selling these devices that people are going to use to infringe. But you need a direct infringer. You need someone who actually infringes the underlying copyright. So they needed to prove, they being Universal and MGM, etc., needed to prove that this guy was infringing. And the pushback by Sony was, hey, look, these guys are not infringers. They're engaged in fair use. And the fair use is this time-shifting fair use. So if you go to slide two, there becomes this question of, okay, hey, what do these people actually do with these copies? Because that's going to be important when we do our analysis about transformative and about impact on the commercial market or potential markets, etc. The analysis indicated that about 75% of the people time shifted. That is, they copied a show to watch it later, but then they just watched it one time and didn't watch it again. There was a percentage that were copying to catalog or archive. I had a friend in law school that had every copy of all of The Simpsons on VHS tapes. I don't know if he ever went back and watched any of them, but he had copies of them. That would be the catalog archiving kind of function. That really was not the analysis the court did for fair use. I think when we talk about fair use, that segment, it's a little bit harder to claim fair use in that category. And a large percentage of these people really only viewed it once. They didn't kind of watch it over and over and over again. So even if they did catalog or archive, in the end, they would only watch it once and not watch it again. And so the question becomes is, okay, this guy's taping the show while he's sleeping, is that fair use? And so we go through the four factors. For the end user, the court finds that the purpose and character of the use is highly transformative, and it's transformative. In some ways, these are the seeds of the distributive transformative nature that we see in Perfect 10 versus Amazon. That is, that it's transformative in that it shifts the time in which I can watch the work versus not watch it at all. Right? So either I tape the Letterman show to watch later, or the Conan O'Brien show, or Jimmy Kimmel, or whatever, to watch later, or I don't watch it at all. And so the purpose and character of this time shifting is highly transformative because it gets the work out there to other people. What's the public benefit? More distribution of the underlying work. We can see that if the idea of archiving or cataloging, where you're watching over and over and over again, that's not as transformative because you get that one plus benefit of the time shift, but those other uses you don't. The other thing the court determines is that the use by the end user is non-commercial in nature. They're using it for their personal use. They're not inviting a bunch of friends over to watch what's been taped. They're just watching it themselves, and so they're not selling it to anybody else. And so this pushes against it being a non-fair use, or pushes it toward it being a fair use. And we're going to see why, because the thought is if it's non-commercial in nature, you're going to get a presumption on factor four that this is not a commercial use. So the court comes out of factor one saying, look, this pushes heavily toward fair use. Factor two, nature of the copyrighted work. The court says, look, you know what? These are highly expressive works. That actually pushes away from fair use. But these are over-the-air transmissions that are publicly available to anyone that has an antenna. The fact that they are publicly available suggests that, you know what? Copying might not be might be fair use because you're allowing anyone to watch it. Right? And that's what's happening here, is that end user is watching it, albeit at a different time. What about factor three? Here, the fact that they copy the whole show, that's the whole purpose of time shifting, pushes away from fair use. And then finally, what's the effect of the use on potential market for and value of the copyrighted work? Here, the fact that it was not commercial didn't push a presumption that you see sometimes courts will look at Sony and say if it's a commercial use, the infringement, that makes a presumption that we have an impact on the market. If you actually go back and take a look at Campbell versus Acuff Rose, the court talks a lot about that presumption from it being a commercial use, the infringement that took place there by Two Live Crew. Here, because it's a private use, we don't get that presumption. So MGM and Universal Studios bear the burden that it has an effect on a potential market for and value of the copyrighted work. And they say, look, the impact here is speculative at best, particularly if you think about the time in which they sued. We didn't have markets that maybe could be affected. At this time, there was no such things as kind of blockbusters or videotape rental stores or DVD rental stores. You could see that potentially taping it at home would displace that potential revenue from the content creator, but that wasn't there at the time. So that's not a market that anyone could even think about. You also didn't have the market of the content creator selling their own archives or catalogs of shows, which they do now. Right? But back then, that's not a market that we could see. Nowadays, right, this kind of copying and shifting would probably be a direct substitute. Possibly. I don't buy the show from Apple iTunes because I've got them all DVR'd and I go back and watch them all the time. So I don't need to go buy that other one. That actually would push against fair use nowadays. But at the time of this case, that was just a speculative market that was there. The other thing you can think about here is that at least for this prong, for archiving and cataloging, those would be more likely to have an impact on even a legitimate potential market. That is watching it again when it comes on TV, right? So instead of watching that movie or that rerun again when it comes on TV, I would pull my archive version down, and there would be some substitution that's there. But if we're thinking about time shifting, where I only watch it once, and I don't look at that copy again, no impact on the market there. And so the court ends up determining that factor one pushes heavily towards transformative because it time shifts. It allows me to watch it some other time. The fact that it was non-commercial means I don't get a presumption here. MGM, Universal bear the burden, saying it's going to harm a potential market or value of their copyrighted work. And the court says, look, all the stuff you're talking about is speculative at best. As the court determines that the direct infringers here are engaged in fair use, which becomes really important because if you don't have direct infringement, you can't have indirect infringement, which is something that we'll talk about here soon.